For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
I will mention, Bodhisattvas, that we are in Sesshin today, so I'm sorry if there was some limited seating in the Zendo. So some people had to be exiled to our alternative, our overflow room. So thank you for being patient and generous. Well, nothing like the week of a very interesting election to gather the Bodhisattvas. Since early Wednesday morning, after this election, for the results of the presidential election were clear, many of you Dragon Bodhisattvas have connected with me and with each other. So I feel we're doing a pretty good job of supporting each other and living from our Bodhisattva hearts under these circumstances. There are 18 people, including Mark and Karen in the cloud, sitting the whole day together. And we're all well grounded in Zazen. And I think we have to take care of each other. Despite recent unfortunate events, yesterday our Tenzo Mike and Tanto Aishin and Swiss Army Knife of a Bodhisattva David Ray. Delicious. Too many titles in this sangha to name for me to remember in my old age. We got together in the morning and cooked a delicious breakfast to help some of the Sesshin friends here learn our harmonious, beautiful style of eating, our traditional eating style for Zendo meals called Oryoki, known as. So I just want to express gratitude to our community, the generous support that we have for each other. On the morning after the election, a dragon checked in with me at 5:22 a.m. asking how I was. They also forwarded election responses from another Zen teacher who was a friend of mine. And I'm sure many of you have inboxes full of Zen teachers' responses, which have been pretty good. But I replied to my Dharma friend, you know, I'm okay. But then I wrote, I had to look back and see, did I really write this? I can't believe it. But I did. I wrote, our practice is to face everything with compassion, authentic presence, and clarity. My current inclination is go to ground, root in the earth on the cushion, and open fully to the situation at hand. I mean, this was a 5 a.m. response from me, but I kind of think it's okay. I know that going to ground can mean hiding, you know, seeking seclusion, burrowing in, or seeking protection. And I certainly knew that I wanted to protect some of my senses from the onslaught of the fire hose of comments about what had just happened, this echo chamber of the media. So maybe I was hiding a little bit, or at least secluding myself a little bit from information curated just for my demographic by a news feed courtesy of some very powerful algorithms. But there were many facets to my going to ground. You know, the image for me was touching the earth, falling to the ground, rising from the earth, rising from my truest, deepest place, not distracted. And this finding the ground beneath our feet, above our heads, is taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. By going to ground, to the Buddha, mind ground, we return home to Zazen, to awakening, to finding support in these wondrous Buddhist teachings, and also connecting to our beloved community, our dragon community. So my friend sent me a note back, texting on the bus on their way to work. I like the return to earth approach. I got to a point this morning where I couldn't watch news reactions anymore. And it was just time to listen to the birds. That's pretty good. This deep listening. Ear to the ground. Heart to the ground. In the great Satipatthana Sutta, which some of you know, also called the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, is Buddha's great teaching of being present, the Dharma of now, nowness. And the Buddha gave these instructions, preliminary instructions to being present with whatever, with everything all at once. And it goes something like this. All of those of you who are familiar with this sutta, excuse me for my own editorial translation. But something like this. A bodhisattva goes to the forest, to the root of a tree. We have two beautiful trees out here. Money trees, but my special favorites are the European poplars out front, which Paul, I think, told me were basswood. A bodhisattva goes to the forest or to the root of a tree or to an empty hut, like we're in an empty hut right now, and sits down. She folds her legs and sets her body upright and establishes mindfulness in front of her. Her bodily and mental attitudes or postures are mental and physical and heart asanas, are diligent, fully awake, and mindful. So there's a brightness to this presence even in darkness. And there's a gentleness and curiosity in our practice. And grounded, there is an energy in the body, and a confidence in our truth, and our hearts meet and stay in the present moment. And as far as I know, mindfulness has this, in the mindfulness sutta, is this word sati, which means to remember, recollect, gather the mind again and again, And even this term sesshin means or has a meaning to gather the heart, gather the mind. Wow. So 18 of us are spending the day doing this. During, and please make yourselves comfortable. During our Thursday morning Dharma on Thursday, I quote it from the Great Flower Adornment Sutra, of a Tamsaka Sutra, and it says, "Thus, Bodhisattvas, it is our own mind that should be established in all the roots of good. It is our own mind that should be soaked by the rain of truth. It is our own mind that should be purified from all obstructive qualities. It is our own mind that should be made vigorous by energy." So this is not a limp practice. It's energized. So some of my energy in going to ground, going to the ground, meeting the ground, is I was putting this effort into arranging my life situation to take care of my own mind, heart and body, which of course we all know is not separate from the heart and body and mind of everything. One practice body. And my effort was also to rest in the stability and stillness of our wonderful Zazen, which this sesshin is doing with me. But we do it even off the cushion. And I'll say, it was clear to me that I did not and do not want to relinquish my presence of mind to this completely unreliable, impermanent, and difficult circumstance, Bodhisattvas. That would be nonsense. I'll also confess, moving through the hours and the days after Tuesday evening, I felt deep, somewhere originating in here, this little seed, little frisson, little wave, that was a deep urge to scream. As a female body person, as a person on the Bodhisattva path, as an ally and friend of the queer, and a friend and ally of people of color, as a daughter of our earth, I did detect this scream seed in this body. It originated in this area. Some people might know more about that energetic place. Tom certainly does. As a practice of Chinese and Japanese healing arts. But I just could feel that little tiny twingy thing. And I just let it flow through the body. Let it flow. And this was a scream of terror, a scream of disgust, a scream of despair. And it was also a scream of defiance and a scream of a warrior. I have some of that blood. And feeling this scream, I didn't feel collapsing. I felt energetic and vowed to practice more vigorously. It did not mean I ran around the house screaming, although I could have. This was also a scream of sorrow, and I felt that my sorrow and my frustration connected to a sister ancestor in the Buddha way named Padachara. So I'll just talk about her little story. So Padachara was one of Buddha's great female disciples. And as you remember, Buddha didn't just accept women into the Sangha initially. They had to sort of force their way in. His own maternal figure pretty much self-ordained when there was some rejection. Just shaved her head and said, put on robes. Said, I don't care what you're telling me, Buddha. I know I'm confident in my truth, my deepest truth. So later on, when women could come to Buddha to join along in Buddha's crew, Padachara came with intense grief and loss, with insanity. In a single day, Padachara experienced the death of her whole family, everyone she loved, her newborn child, her older child, her brother, her mother, her husband, her father, and went mad with grief, ripped off her clothes, and wandered naked and crazy on the street. I don't know. I heard that, like, the monks around Buddha were like, don't let this crazy woman near Buddha. But Buddha said, come here. He said, sister, recover your presence of mind. Maybe he said, sister, go to ground. Sister, wake up. But maybe he just said, snap out of it. Be present now. And at these simple words, she snapped out of it. Padachara, whose name I was told means cloak walker, walking around naked, but some monk, I guess, gave her a cloak. Or maybe something like this, like Buddha's robe. And she regained her sanity and coherence on the spot. But she did, you know, and this is how we are with our stories, right? We want to keep talking about them. Fortunately, she did not probably have, you know, Facebook and Instagram to amplify everything, you know, but she tells this story, which is really a very sad story. I'm widowed, homeless, orphaned, you know, alone. So I was kind of crazy. And let me tell you all about this story. And Buddha was like, look, I am not the person who can help you. For countless lives, you have wept for children and loved ones. Your tears could fill the four oceans. But no child or loved one can be a secure refuge or hiding place. Knowing this, a wise person walks the path of awakening. A wise person finds their ground. And in some ways, this can seem harsh, a little bit of tough love, maybe. Maybe tough, but true. And Buddha did affirm Padachara's strength and connectedness, because through our grief, we're connected to everyone. And Padachara then said, please ordain me. Buddha was like, cool, you can join the Sangha. And she practiced diligently, clearly and mindfully. and still was like, I'm not quite awake yet. I'm not fully there. And one day, after roaming around, she went home and was washing her feet in a bowl of water and poured some of the water away. So this is like mindfully washing the dishes or mindfully serving in the zendo, but she was mindfully washing her feet, pouring the water away, a little bit of water, and she saw how then it soaked into the ground, completely disappearing, that dirty water. She poured out a little more and noticed it just kept disappearing. The third time, she poured out even more. She just dumped the whole bucket and watched it. And still, it went a little further along the ground and disappeared. And she thought, this is the way it is with humans. Some of us die as children, some in middle age, but all of it flows away. All of it ends. This is the truth, of course, that we all know of impermanence. And we don't talk about this very much in Soto Zen in America, but Buddha had some special powers of knowing people's minds. So Buddha was in some other location, read her thoughts, and then mysteriously appeared in a vision in front of her, you know, and said, Padachara, all human beings die in the end. So it's better to see the truth of impermanence, even for one moment, than to live 100 years without deeply knowing it. So Padachara was completely awakened by the ground, by the dirt, by the flowing water, and she became one of the greatest of the women teachers at the time of the Buddha. So here's her enlightenment poem. Having washed my feet, I watched that water, noticing the foot water flowing from high to low ground. And you know, I've been doing Zen practice for too long because I started to make comments in parentheses next to her text, which is sort of how the koan commentaries go. But flowing from high to low ground, I'm like, oh yeah, reality constantly flows. With that, the mind was calmed. And just as a noble, thoroughbred horse, my comments, tame the horse. Having taken my lamp, the light, I went into my hut, inspected the sleeping place, and then sat upon the couch. So it's kind of shining the light. And having taken a pin, I pushed the wick right down. And just as the lamp went out, so all delusion of the heart or of my mind went too. So Padachara's insane wailing was met with kindness, compassion, and clarity by the Buddha. And she returned to the ground as she watched the water flow. You know, there's so many stories that we could tell from our ancestors. But I like Padachara's. Because she didn't come into practice, she didn't meet the Buddha like with having it all together, having the perfect, correct response to a disastrous election or to the demise of her entire family. And I found this comforting. like if you're raging and crying and screaming, bodhisattvas, you're in very good company with our sister Padachara. And Padachara's pain was her teacher. And through fully expressing it, fully being with it, being vulnerable, this is the way that she found her true strength and her integrity, and in some ways her true protection. You know, and here's an inconvenient truth, right? The first noble truth. We are plagued by experiences that we don't want, and we'd never get enough of the ones we want. So, if we regard everything with compassion, authentic presence, and clarity, then pain, insanity, and grief fall to the ground. They're seeds of awakening, watered by our tears. You know, said that these Taras underneath Avalokiteshvara were born from the tears of Buddha. Of Avalokiteshvara. Wouldn't that be great? If our screams produced healing, protecting, loving beings? I hope that's the case. So, our bodhisattva way on our cushions is going to the ground, laying on the ground, resting on the ground, rising from the ground, watering the ground, even though there's no place to stand, as they say. So, I'll share another message I received at 7:55 a.m. on Wednesday morning from someone in this room who texted me a post by Barbara Kingsolver. Probably this bodhisattva knew that I just am not very good with social media, so I'd never find this out unless it was sent to me. And I found it pretty uplifting and true and dharmic. It says, truth and love have been smacked down so many more times in history before today. Last night I was having dinner, this is not Barbara, but last night I was having dinner with a friend, a queer friend, maybe like 10 years younger than myself. And we were talking, and he said, you know, I was a teenage boy during the AIDS crisis. Every day, I felt terrified of who I am. I know I can live through this. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. So Barbara Kingsolver says, truth is smacked down because it's often inconvenient. The Dharma is inconvenient. And love is smacked down because it is vulnerable. So when we are compassionate, we are very vulnerable in a certain way. But truth, she continues, is like gravity and carbon and the sun behind an eclipse. It's still there. And love stays alive if you tend it like a flame. And if you feel crushed by unkindness today, it's time for grieving, reaching out to loved ones, and noticing one bright color somewhere in the day, or the bird song. Or the beautiful carrots our Tenzo was shredding with, I think, Elliot this afternoon. And she goes on, remembering what there is to love, starting with the immediate, the place, and people we can tend ourselves and make safe. We can't save everything all at once, but it's still worth saving something because there are so many of us to do it. So we can feel like, you know, we all lost an election. But we're all still here today, she goes on to say. Exactly as we were yesterday, like gravity and carbon and the sun behind an eclipse. Remembering what there is to love, start with the immediate, the place, and the people we can tend ourselves and make safe. I think those are really great lines. And this is, I don't know if Barbara Kingsolver is a Buddhist, I kind of doubt it, but starting with the immediate, the place and the people we can tend ourselves, our corner of the world. So I find this very kind of encouraging in the midst of a lot of apparent discouragement. And I hope we all can come to our senses, but I'd like to kind of open things up now and invite everyone to share whatever you want about the ground, about this life in this moment, and maybe what helps you not go completely insane in the face of insane situations. So thank you all very much. And Jordan, you can help with online.
Thank you for a really uplifting talk, which is, you know, I think deeply needed right now. I really appreciate it. And I also woke up on Wednesday morning feeling, you know, when I looked at my phone and saw some post-election news, feeling so many negative feelings. I can't even find a word for them, but or pick them out. But the second thing that I saw was my family has a text chat string, and on the text chat I saw that both my sister and my cousin reported that their college student children called them in the middle of the night, crying and saying, "What are we going to do?" And I was really struck by that because I, as probably many of you know, I work with college students, and I realized that, yes, I am feeling that, but there are also people feeling similarly to me who have far fewer resources for understanding and processing and taking care of themselves. And we had my department had already planned on doing some post-election, having kind of a conversation space and some soothing. And we had some handouts already printed out, which I immediately sent off to my family. But I also thought about the loving kindness meditation. And I went and I got a script that I really liked for a loving kindness meditation that I could, you know, send to my family, but also maybe do with students that I came into contact with. And even when I didn't do it, I just remembered, you know, that the loving kindness meditation is all about taking care of myself, wishing happiness and ease to myself, extending that to someone or people that I love, extending that then to maybe someone who's a little bit more difficult. And then this one I liked especially because it recommended extending it to sort of the whole community, the surrounding community. But that's perhaps something that I can do right now, because there's a lot of hurt in the world, and sometimes that is me, and sometimes it is someone else. I'm not saying that everyone has to do this or that this is the way. Or that this is going to fix or solve anything. I think we are all just walking, you know, step by step by step through whatever is happening for us, and trying to help ourselves and help each other. And this was one thing that resonated for me.
Thank you.
So I wanted to share that.
Oh, Kathy.
Thank you for your talk, Ogetsu. I just have to say, Barbara Kingsolver is one of my favorite authors. Mm-hmm. It's an emotional topic. Mm-hmm. She's my age, and she grew up very close to where I grew up. Mm-hmm. But she has written, I've read everything she's written, she has written a couple of books recently that really do depict the rather grim circumstances in this country. And I think she's almost trying to kind of paint a picture of some of the devastation and capture it. But the other side is that she also is a naturalist. She's got a couple of different degrees, and she includes much about the natural world and has written whole books just on evolution and the natural process. Mm-hmm. So she brings you back to the ground. She does both of those. And I think it is helpful to read, be acquainted with somebody who has the ability to see the starkness of the problem and the problems, as well as get the overview of the natural process. Mm-hmm. The natural world, I mean. I find her company.
Thank you, Kathy. Earth witnessing, Barbara Kingsolver witnessing.
I really appreciated Thursday morning's talk. You mentioned, you mentioned the history. This moment is not, it's a different moment because all moments are different. Because that's what's happening. Things are changing, but it is also not new. People have sat in rooms like this, not necessarily in this kind of configuration, but they've sat in rooms and been incredibly hopeless, felt incredibly hopeless, and may have been and felt incredibly helpless and may have been, and things changed. And these moments will change, and maybe we will also have a repeat of these moments. Again, it seems like that's from what we know. That's what happens. Actually, on Thursday when you were mentioning that, because you've been doing a lot of delving into the Satipatthana Sutra, I was thinking then, and I didn't mention it, it's like that, what we've been talking about in the last couple of weeks about the decay. This is also, in some ways, that the natural, the thing that is happening, we don't all live forever. Well, none of us live forever. and so, societies don't live forever, but I think for, at least I've been thinking about it a lot all my life, but this whole, the idea, the linearity of good, things will always get better. That's a, I think that's a lie that we've been sold, and maybe it's an addiction that we're all involved in, but it doesn't necessarily. That's not what happens, but that's what we, and I think a part of in 2016, that was very, very obvious to me, is that people really thought that things would always get better, and how could it not always get better? I was raised by some pretty jaded people who've gone through lots of devastation, and 50 years ago it wasn't better for lots of people. The AIDS crisis wasn't better for lots of people. Anyway, it's just the history of the moments as well. So, but they do change. They always have, it seems.
Yeah, that wishful thinking, always going to be better, according to my comfort. And also the realization that, you know, for a lot of people, it's not better. And things are difficult. Mm-hmm. And throughout history, you know, if this is the worst it is, then we're lucky. But this, I mean, throughout history, there have been pretty giant, terrible things in our own history in this country that continue. So, yeah. Thanks for reminding me. I never remember what I said. So, but I'm 100% accountable. Howard Bodhisattva.
These are not, there's no coherent through line here, but I was thinking similarly to you, Anastasia. As a queer therapist, I work with a lot of queer people, and it's kind of remarkable this last week of, like, there was a lot of pain and a lot of heartbreak and a lot of fear and anxiety, I think rightfully so. But there was also an incredible amount of compassion that I saw in my clients, and I felt similarly, in the sense of, There is no illusion here. It was Electoral College and popular vote.
Yeah.
And the conversations they would hear from family members and friends who didn't really truly know what they were voting for it just shocked them so wildly that it was not even some of them are on the, like, I'm going to cut them off line, which is fine. But a lot of them were on the side of, I haven't been listening, I think. I don't think they've been listening either. And I don't think the way forward is to cut them off completely. Mm-hmm. I know that people need to do what they need to do to survive, right? But I was not expecting that response. I think I was expecting a lot of, I think, of my own, right, fear and anxiety. As a queer person, as someone who is not white. And I'm reminded of, this is a line from Dogen, and I always forget how it goes, but it's more about how you remember it, right? Something about, like, when you fall, the ground rises up to meet you, which is, like, a bit like a smack.
Yeah.
whatever the ground is, like, when you fall, you just, like, you know, you hit the ground, and you, boom, wake up, right? But this memory, this remembering that, like, oh, wait, there is still something here for me to stand on, sit on. It is mysterious. It's more than just the stuff that is going on in the everyday. But it's also a good reminder of, like, pay attention to the patterns, pay attention to the cycles. We were here 8 years ago, and it was very similar and also very different. I remember it wasn't Wednesday, because Wednesday was just a shock. And I just sort of, like, was being soft and kind with myself of, like, I'm not reading the news. I'm not doing any of this. I already know what happened. What more is it going to do to me to stare at the news all day? Thursday, I woke up and I felt this, like, I felt a pain in my body and a fatigue in my body that within seconds of waking up, I realized I haven't felt this pain in since the last term. My body remembers this.
Mm-hmm.
How long have I forgotten that that was there? And that allowed for me to just pay attention to it, to notice, you know, I don't know if it was a scream as much as it was a cry,
mm-hmm.
right? But yeah, the ground coming up to meet me was it can be both like a smack and a catch at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of how I've been feeling it and what I was thinking of when you read the King's Offer.
Smack and a catch.
Mm-hmm.
Joe online.
Ah, Joe. Hello.
I'm happy about what happened this week, in case that needs to be said. But I've been trying to deal with it, and I'm not sure whether I'm trying to center myself or just playing hopscotch with the delusions. I knew from my experience with the public opinion that the polls were likely to be wrong. I didn't think they would be wrong to this extent and in this direction. So that in itself was a bit of a humbling event. Again, I'm not happy with what's happening, but I'm trying to stay sober and trying to stay rational about it. It's not, in my opinion, the end of democracy. It's not incipient fascism. Trump is not Hitler. Hitler had a brain. And Hitler came to power in his 40s, if I remember correctly, very fit, vegetarian. We can't say this about Blubberbot. So I'm a little bit leery about some of the alarmist rhetoric, but it's not good news to me. And the acquaintances that I have in my personal life that are Trumpers, we've just learned. I mean, if we had any kind of regard for each other to begin with, we've learned to either stay away from the subject or argue with dignity. It can be done. It's hard, but it can be done. However, there's social media, and I cannot help but get caught up. I don't do X. I don't do Meta, but I'm a Reddit worm. And Reddit's all over the place, including the right-wing nut jobs. And I cannot help myself but get involved with debates. And I know half these guys are from Russia. You know, I know these guys are BS. But I can't help but get into stupid arguments about them, realizing they're stupid, withdraw far too late, thinking, well, maybe somebody read it and agrees with me. But then I block the guy. But that's kind of my struggle now. It's not real life. It's that I'm getting caught up in social media, and I'm kind of ashamed of myself for having fallen for it. That's all I got.
Thank you, Joe, for that true confession, and that. How could we not fall for it? I mean, so many resources are dedicated to getting our attention and getting us riled up and involved. So how could that not be? Unless you kind of go cold turkey, and that's also difficult. But our way is to regain our minds, to return to the Buddha mind ground. And in the midst of that, I'm sure, Joe, you will be liberated from that. The gravitational pull of the social media. But it's difficult. And this is we watch how we want to bargain with this reality to make it better or worse. But our hope is to see it very clearly. And I do advocate resistance, bodhisattvas, to harm, to the danger involved. And that resistance is healing, and it's not dumb. It's not kumbaya. but we don't have a shred of a chance of acting from a settled, clear, effective place and protect our world if we're probably caught up in some argument with a Russian bot. Maybe that will work. I'm not sure. Not sure. But maybe that bot will kind of enlighten us. I'll tell this funny story. So my former husband came to visit. And, you know, we were married in another lifetime. But he said he was having a problem with his son. So he put the problem into ChatGPT. True story. And he's like, here's my problem. And he said, I had to run it through quite a few times. But I kept saying, I need to be more empathic to the bot. And this has always been his struggle, right? So he was really appealing to this AI. Okay, he gets a response he likes and says, I think this is it. There's a problem he and his adult son, have been in for a long time. He's, by the way, a Rinzai practitioner. And he cuts and pastes the ChatGPT in the email, sends it to his son. His son calls him on the telephone. Now, what 25-year-old calls a parent on his telephone? Calls him on the telephone, and he says, Dad, you finally get me. He said, it's changed our relationship. And I said, don't tell him where you are. You don't do your, you're such a great guy. You've gone through all these men's groups and stuff, but I know empathy's difficult. So you were brilliant to invoke ChatGPT. So I'm not saying that all this stuff, technological life, maybe Reddit will produce awakening for Joe. You know, we don't know. But you have to be ready for it. You know, and skillful. And wise and clear. So, you know, I'm not excluding anything as an awakening experience, as the seed of awakening. Nothing. So I don't want to diminish anything. But we have to know ourselves and know what makes us crazy and what helps us stay sane and grounded and loving. And I think one of the things is community. So, Trina.
Something that has kept me, that sustained me through the summer while I was doing what I thought was what I needed to do for this situation and to prepare for this eventuality was to believe that I was choosing the right things to do and let go of what the outcome would be. Mm-hmm. That as long as I knew that I was being kind or compassionate or advocating for something that I thought would make the world a better place, whether or not it came to be, that was all I could do. Like, I can make my contribution and try to let go of the outcome. I mean, I'm of course still very sad, but that's an incomplete thought.
Thank you. So this is a true bodhisattva way of offering all of it up without that little hook of like, you know, it can be like, I wish, like the metta sutta or the metta prayer for the metta meditation. I wish strongly. And also I will eat what is served in my Oreoke bowl this afternoon. So, thank you.
I think Dennis online has something.
Oh, Dennis, sorry. Yeah, thank you, Jordan. Nice to see you, Dennis.
Thank you for your talk. There's a line in the verses on the faith mind that says, here thought, feeling, knowledge, and imagination are of no value. And I have really been focusing on the imagination piece and realizing how much my imagination you know, is the creator of all these stories in my head. And it's kind of the glue that holds all my stories together. And I've just been trying to interrupt it because I'm finding it, I can really go places with it relative to this whole thing. And I have absolutely no idea what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. You know, we're great storytellers. I wondered just, you know, we're getting close to probably a good time to end, but I wanted to just ask if you don't have to answer this if you can't or don't want to, but I was curious when you were talking, what helps interrupt that process?
This practice of mm-hmm. just being able to see it, catching mm-hmm. it. Sometimes I catch it and sometimes I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's the practice for me of being able to maybe catch it a little bit more often.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you stop a little, like when you catch it, something happens.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I can see what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
If I can catch it, if I can, then maybe I have the option to interrupt it, you know, and you know, stop where it's going.
Yeah. But there's choice. So you find a choice point even in the midst of this seemingly.
Yes. Yes.
Situation.
Mm-hmm. It's a conscious, it's what I'm finding is that it's, you know, sometimes my choices aren't conscious.
Mm-hmm.
So. Mm-hmm. It's the learning, it's the catching it consciously and being able to say,
mm-hmm.
do I want to follow this?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So maybe it's time for us to move on unless I miss somebody. But I want to thank everyone for your wonderful Bodhisattva presence. And I think, you know, those of you who are joining us today, of course, for the public program, we sadly don't have tea, and maybe you're relieved we don't have work period, but just the sushi people get to take advantage of both of those today. And I think that our website and our newsletter are full of announcements. So without further ado, I want to thank you very much, and may all beings see in accordance with the truth, the true Dharma, and remain forever free from discord and contentiousness. May the merit of our practice and vows benefit every being in place. Surpassable.
We vow to realize it.